The Respect for Marriage Act is making its way through Congress. The bill would repeal the 1996 Defense of Marriage Act and protect the right to marry nationwide, regardless of sex, race, or ethnicity. It passed the U.S. House last week, now on to the Senate, where it needs 10 Republican votes to pass. So far, five GOP senators, including Wisconsin's Ron Johnson, have said they won't vote to block the bill. Others say they're still reviewing the bill or that it's unnecessary. Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin introduced the Respect for Marriage Act in the Senate. She's been working to find more Republican support. I talked to her earlier today. Can you talk about the need, as you see it, to pursue this legislation, this Respect for Marriage Act, right now?
Yes. Well, in light of the U.S. Supreme Court overturning Roe versus Wade, there are a number of other areas where rights and responsibilities and freedoms seem to be in jeopardy. The case overturning Roe versus Wade implicates issues like access to contraception, same-sex marriage and interracial marriage, and a number of other areas where the court found fundamental rights and freedoms in the Constitution. All of those have been upended by the court, the court's decision in overturning Roe versus Wade. And so people who are married as a result of the Obergefell decision, legalizing marriage equality, legalizing same-sex marriage, are quite anxious about the certainty of their marriages. And so we want to address this promptly by eliminating from the federal statutes the Defense of Marriage Act, and making it clear that a marriage that has been validly entered into in the state in which it was entered into will be respected in every state and by the federal government by virtue of the full faith and credit provision of the Constitution.
On a practical level, this will need 60 votes in the Senate to avoid a filibuster. And you, I understand, are taking some of the lead here in recruiting some of the 50 Republicans. What has that effort been like so far?
It is a very hopeful effort, I will say. As I have individual conversations with Republican colleagues, it is gratifying to hear them, in most cases, take the issue very seriously, ask questions. Certainly our discussion about the time sensitivity of this is one that's coming up a lot. But I'm pleased to report that we have five Republicans who have publicly indicated their support for the Respect for Marriage Act. And in conversations, I'm pretty close to having five additional members who have expressed their support privately, not wanting to go public until the vote occurs.
Your Wisconsin colleague, Senator Ron Johnson, says he won't block this, though he's described it as unnecessary and fear-mongering in effect. And I understand you were in earshot of your colleague from Florida, Senator Rubio, describing it as a stupid and a waste of time. What do you say to your colleagues who are making this case that, hey, this is just unnecessary, it's not going to get overturned, don't worry about it?
So predicting the actions of the Supreme Court and predicting the outcomes of cases in the future is not a perfect science. So I think that the country has been so shocked by the overturning of Roe versus Wade after 49 years since the initial decision. It was well settled precedent. And many of the justices on the court currently said as much, that it was well settled precedent and that they respect precedent. And so I think whatever side you are on with regard to Roe versus Wade, it was a shocking case and has left these other issues. People are seriously concerned about the certainty of their marriages. People are also concerned about access to contraception moving forward, again, given this case.
We're talking to U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin about the Respect for Marriage Act and its prospects in the Senate. Senator Baldwin, one objection that's come up, including from Republican Congressman from Wisconsin, Mike Gallagher, is that as they see it, the technical parts of this bill could legalize not just same-sex marriage, but polygamy. Have you run into that concern? What do you say to that?
I believe that it's an unfounded concern. I understand an outside group is trying to raise this issue because of the word marriage not being defined in one of the sections of the bill as a relationship between two individuals. But what I would point to in federal statutes is multiple occurrences of the word marriage without that constriction. And we know that there has never been an interpretation to allow marriage between more than two people. And in fact, such marriages are not recognized in any state in the union, nor are they recognized by the federal government. And in cases where there have been individuals from overseas who, from different cultures and countries, I know that those marriages have not been recognized in the United States either.
Now, you're the first openly gay senator in U.S. history. How are your own experiences factoring into the conversations you're having with your colleagues on this bill?
I have been working on issues around marriage and civil unions and domestic partnerships since the mid-1990s. And so watching the progression in the 50 states, watching the litigation that has occurred over time in states and at the federal level gives me a deep knowledge of this issue. But there's also the personal side, which is knowing so many who had to go to great lengths to write out contracts and other legal documents to protect their families, to replicate what marriage rights and responsibilities they could in legal documents, and not all of them can be replicated. So if you think about things like access to your spouse, if they've just been injured and taken an ambulance to the hospital, there, if you are not married, if you are a legal stranger, you have no right to get information about your loved one's condition. And you don't even have a right to go and visit and attend to them by their bedside. Think of how horrible that was before marriage equality was the law of the land. And that's just one of really hundreds of examples of the rights and responsibilities that a marriage confers. And so I bring that knowledge to my conversations with colleagues. I think too many times when they're thinking about the word marriage, they're thinking about the ceremony, the wedding. But I'm thinking about this set of legal rights and responsibilities that are conferred with a marriage certificate and marriage that were, you know, before Obergefell was decided, were not accessible to same-sex couples.
Senator Baldwin, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
Democratic U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin is backing the Respect for Marriage Act, currently awaiting a vote in the Senate. We talked to her earlier today about the bill and her work to find support from her Republican colleagues. Coming up, an economist joins the show to break down the many signals coming from the economy right now, what it all means for where it could be headed, and the risk of a recession. You can join in right now at 800-642-1234. Are you still seeing high prices when you shop? Have you pulled back on spending lately? How do you feel about the economy right now? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up that conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. Coming up, a film critic joins the show to share his take on some of the biggest movies out this summer and to preview some exciting movies in the next few months. First, the Federal Reserve raised interest rates 0.75% yesterday in its latest effort to tamp down inflation. The Fed's trying to cool off the economy just enough to get inflation under control without cooling it off so much that it triggers a recession. But new numbers out today show a drop in gross domestic product, or GDP. That's adding to questions about whether we could be in a recession now or whether we might be in the near future. You can join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. Yaman Ahmed is a professor of economics at UW-Whitewater. Yaman, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob. Appreciate it.
Let's look at today's news first. The GDP down a bit. Inflation was part of the story there. 2 quarters in a row. Now, some sort of shoestring definition say that's a recession right there. 2 down quarters in a row. What do you make of it?
It's the 2 quarters, successive quarters, is sort of like a rule of thumb that a lot of people try to follow and kind of use that to kind of gauge how's the economy doing? If we're in a downturn, that's what they may be looking at. But in the U.S., it's kind of interesting because that's not the official way that I guess they actually make a determination for whether a recession is happening or not. There's a group at the NBER called the Business Cycle Dating Committee who actually look not just at just measures of output like GDP, but they look at a whole bunch of different things. They look at things like personal incomes, they look at employment, they look at how much people are spending in terms of consumption expenditures, they look at all these different kind of things, and then they try and make a determination. So the US is kind of interesting in that way because it's the NBER that actually classifies, hey, a recession's happened or not, or we're in an expansion. And they typically do that a little bit after the data's come in. So right now the data is coming in, of course, as you said today, we had our initial preliminary estimate for the second quarter of 2022, and that's showing that for the second time in a row, I guess, that GDP fell. But the picture is actually kind of mixed because while some things in the economy, like GDP, are showing, you know, that there's negative outlook for the economy, there are some things that are showing positive outlook for the economy. And so it's kind of interesting times that we're in right now.
What are some of the positives that might make people feel hesitant to say, yeah, recession now?
Well, some of the things that obviously, you know, as you mentioned, there's some negative things like inflation and output. But one of the things that we're seeing is that employment is actually doing well. So if you're looking at the labor market, for example, unemployment is still really low across the nation. On average, it's pretty low. If you're looking at employment, like the number of new jobs being created each month, that's still going strong. You know, typically we tend to think of a strong, healthy economy as one where this is like about 200,000 jobs being created a month. We're exceeding that, you know, those numbers. So certainly in the labor market, there's some evidence to suggest that the economy is still actually doing fairly well. Also with Household spending. Household spending has still been going up despite that. And if you're looking at, for example, like just after the pandemic, savings really increased because people worried about whether they would be laid off or other things. And we're not seeing that. Savings has sort of come down, but an actual expenditure seem to be still increasing despite what people might feel. But there's a mixture, as I said, there's a mixture of positive and negative pieces of evidence. And it's sort of like a puzzle for us economists to try and figure out what's exactly going on right now.
All right. So Yaman, that was today's big economic news, those GDP numbers. Let's look at yesterday's big economic news.
Sure.
Now the Federal Reserve saying, I think this is a big, a 0.75 increase,
yes,
in the interest rate.
Yes.
I don't know. Is there buyer's remorse? We put out this jump in the interest rate and then we see the GDP went down a bit.
No, it'd be too quick for that to happen.
Well, right.
The GDP numbers would be, obviously with the GDP numbers, we're kind of collecting the data over the last 3 months, right, and seeing what's happened there. With the Fed's, you know, has this dual mandate where they, you know, care about what's happening with inflation, as well as what's happening with unemployment or maximum employment. Full employment is what they're looking for. With that, like I said, the employment picture is good, but right now they're trying to deal with the inflationary pressures in the economy. So they've been raising interest rates. And again, as you said, the 75 basis points, a 0.75% increase yesterday, certainly is going to have an impact, on the economy in terms of making it more costly to borrow. And so people who are, you know, it affects all these other kind of interest rates that you see, for example, like mortgage rates. It affects, interest rate on credit cards. It affects, even student loans and other adjustable rate mortgages, or anything that's adjustable. Those will all change as the Federal Reserve is raising. And of course, that's going to make it more expensive to borrow. And the Fed's going in there with the idea of trying to slow down spending a little bit so that it doesn't create that inflationary pressure. But the Fed's kind of also walking a tightrope because if they raise it too quickly, it could push the economy into recession. But at the same time, they're going for what they're calling the soft landing and hopefully trying to tame inflation without creating too much unemployment. Right? And that's sort of like the main trade-off that they're facing. But it's tricky. Right now, they're walking very close. It's a tightrope for them. So.
UW-Whitewater economics professor Yaman Ahmed is with us looking at lots of economic news. GDP down a bit for two quarters in a row now. Federal Reserve bumping up interest rates a little more. Plus, there's inflation. And Yaman, we've got that bump up from the Federal Reserve, the interest rate. This GDP down a bit. I mean, is that something, this news out today, something that might bring down inflation? Hey, maybe this will not be such bad news after all if, in fact, it helps bring down inflation.
It's going to be interesting to see how the public at large interpret that information and how they react to it, because a large part of what drives inflation is, you know, people's expectations of what inflation are going to be in the future. So if the Fed really, if the perception is that inflation is out of control, it'll be really hard to bring down. And so it starts affecting things like, households, perceptions of the future actually impact their decisions that they're making today. So if they're thinking, oh, things are getting more expensive, I might want to start saving a bit rather than spending because I need to tighten up because, you know, prices are going up so much, you know, that could actually in some ways have a detrimental effect. It could slow down the economy quite a lot. So it's a large part of it is trying to understand how the public at large is interpreting these signals that the economy is giving and, you know, what they're hearing in the news and then how they're reacting to it in terms of how they affect their own expenditure habits, whether they're tightening up, tightening the belt buckle or, are they doing as they are? And it'll be different across, you know, for everybody across in terms of how they react. And part of that and part of the thing for policymakers is like the Federal Reserve, people of the Fed, is trying to see how their announcements are also being interpreted and how people are reacting when they're basing those policy decisions. So it's a tricky balance to try and achieve for sure.
we're in weird territory here. And one of the reasons I've heard from other economists anyway is the weird supply chain shocks that started with the beginning of the pandemic back in 2020. We're still seeing them as, Chinese production towns shut down, Russia invasion of Ukraine hitting supply. How much of these different threads here tie into that supply chain concern?
Oh, very much, quite a lot, because the Fed's response, for example, as we're talking about, will have to depend on whether the inflation that we're seeing is really coming from the demand side of the economy or the supply side of the economy. If it's coming from the demand side of the economy, the tools that they normally have can deal with it quite effectively. But if it's coming from the supply, as we're sort of seeing through the supply chain issues, through the things that are happening in the rest of the world, it creates a sort of dilemma for the Federal Reserve, because if the Fed does tighten, on one side, they could raise interest rates really quickly, and that would tamper down on inflation, but it could really create a bad recession. But if they're worried about the recession at the same time and are not tampering down hard enough, then inflation could still remain out of control. So that's sort of like the tightrope they're working. But certainly the supply chain issues, everything on the production side, and that's adding to the cost of production. We're seeing more recently, wage growth. And that wage growth, because, of course, we're seeing inflation, there's a lag effect, and wages are slowly starting to rise, and that will maybe contribute to further inflation down the road. So it's a lot of different sources that's coming together in conjunction at one point, and policymakers are having a tough road ahead.
Yaman, we'll leave it there. Thanks for helping us piece this all together.
Sure, of course.
That's Yaman Ahmed, professor of economics at UW-Whitewater. He joined us today to talk about the many mixed signals in the U.S. economy and concerns about a possible recession, with a second quarter in a row now with a decline in the GDP. That new information out today.